and welcome to another edition of Radio Free Nintendo. This is your sometimes host, Evan Birchfield. I'm here with yet another four-person edition. I'm proud to have our pirates on the air. We've got Carl and Stan.
Yo-ho-ho!
Yar!
And we've, of course, got our very good friend and apparently podcast regular, Jonathan Metz, and site director. So how are you, Johnny?
Hi!
We've got a few topics to discuss this week. Among them is the article posted by our staffer, Mike Gammon, who was at Nintendo's press event in New York and got to play, have some great first-hand experience with Wii, and had some negative impressions of the Wii speaker. His comments included that it didn't sound very good, it sounded like a DS speaker, and that it was blown out, and that as an audiophile he didn't appreciate the quality. So I want to ask you guys what you think about that. Does the speaker need to be all that good? Is this a major problem? Is this something that needs to be fixed? I'm going to start with you, Carl.
Well, okay, here's the thing. I mean, it's a small controller, it's not something that's used, so it's obviously kids can't handle a high-quality speaker. Secondly, I mean, were people really expecting it to really be that great? It's probably not gonna have music, alright? It's probably just gonna be little, you know, gimmicky sound effects every once in a while. And for that, I think it'll get the job done. As long as they don't put something too audio-intensive into that speaker, it'll work out fine.
Okay. Well, what about the fact that they're going to be including all the sound effects for the sword in the Wii speaker
that
for The Legend of Zelda?
I really don't like that. Because it's going to sound really bad. when you have high-pitched sounds like sword slashes on like a really low-quality speaker like the one that's probably in the Wii, it's going to sound really annoying, so I hope they have an option to turn that off.
Stan, how do you feel about that? Do you think we should have an option to turn off the speaker?
Oh, definitely, because I wouldn't be using it. I've actually got big speakers at my house, and from what I understand, a good portion of the population does as well, especially the gaming population, and it's going to drown out anything that comes from that thing. And I'd much rather have those sound effects coming from my speakers than some rinky-dink speaker in a controller.
Sure. Absolutely. The other question is, I think this is a very valuable question, is the speaker even a good idea? Does it add anything to the gameplay? Is it one of those things that Nintendo's come up with that they think is neat and they think has potential, but in fact doesn't? I mean, and of course we always bring up connectivity and a lot of other things, but Johnny, what do you think about that?
Well, it's definitely different than connectivity because it doesn't require any extra equipment. I like the idea of the speaker. I wrote an editorial about why I think it's a good idea, how it could be possibly used in some innovative ways. And I think the greatest value of it is as a sort of like pseudo surround system. Because I think, you know, if you look at the mass market that Nintendo's trying to go to, a lot of them don't have surround systems because they're not gamers. And even though I am a fairly hardcore gamer, I actually don't have a surround system because my TV has decent speakers and I don't want to spend $1,000 on a receiver and, you know, this and that, a mixer and an amp and five or six speakers. So I don't have a nice speaker set for my TV. It still sounds good. So I think for people like me who don't have a bunch of fancy audio equipment, the Wii speaker could be pretty nice. I also am not that picky about sound quality. So if it's as good as a DS or a DS Lite speaker, that's fine with me. I use those all the time. And you know, it's a cheap way to provide some kind of surround effect. But I definitely think it should be turned off, like a Rumble, and I think it probably will be an option in pretty much all games.
Yeah. Do we consider it, is there any kind of concept, this question for everybody, that we can think of that would actually improve gameplay? This is one of those, is this really an innovative Wii feature, or is this a tack-on?
I think it can absolutely add something to the experience. I think Mike even mentioned something in one of his impressions articles for Big Brain Academy, or the equivalent on Wii, where it gives you like little sound hints of whenever, like, what your opponents are doing. So something simple like that, it can definitely add to the experience, you know, make it seem more immersive. Yeah.
I don't see why they can't do that with a regular speaker, though.
Well, the thing about that is that if you're doing four-player gaming and you have a sound that comes out of a regular speaker, you don't know who it applies to. Because it's centered to one person, not the group as a whole.
Yeah, for a mini-game concept, yeah, that would be pretty innovative. That's a pretty decent use for it.
I keep hearing people talk about WarioWare too, as though that is going to be the game that really uses it.
Oh yeah, that'll be cool.
I certainly hope so.
I mean, if you look at the connectivity games on GameCube, if you turn up the volume on your Game Boy Advance when it's hooked up, it plays sounds for your specific character or, you know, whatever. And it's a pretty nice feature unless you're sitting really close together while you play. But if you're spread out a little bit, it's nice. But I think the more interesting effect is having sounds travel from your controller to the TV or back. And that's not something that you can replicate really in any way with surround, because surround system is really only good for a small area of the room. You have to be sitting or standing in a certain place to really get the intersection of all the speakers. And with the Wii remote speaker, it's always going to be near you. You know, it's always going to be within earshot, no matter, even if you're moving all over the room playing games, even though you don't have to move that much, really. But, you know, it's a cool thing. The question is whether anybody really uses it for that.
It'd be great for a gauntlet, you know, instead of having a big loud voice saying, "Wizard needs food," you could just come out right out of your controller.
I just got a cool idea for a cool use for the controller. Remember in Resident Evil 4 when you get that sound for when a regenerator comes near you? Wouldn't that be cool if you got that from the controller?
Yeah, I
could. It depends on whether it sounded really good and creepy or if it sounded like...
I mean, the regenerator noise wasn't that, you know, it wasn't a really complex sound. It was just a...
We have to consider that Resident Evil as a game could use a lot of cool special features with the speaker. I think that there's... With creeping a gamer out, they're obviously one of the most successful games, I think, and... If they could add something where, you know, heart beating, not only a rumble, but a noise, or a noise that moves from the television, and it sounds as though it's getting closer, but you can't see it, closer to the speaker, I can see that being frightening.
So yeah, that would definitely be cool.
On the subject of a heartbeat, I have to think that's going to be used in Trauma Center.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
It's got to be.
Absolutely.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah, and it's something that could have actually aided the DS game, is to have the Rumble Pack in, I guess. I don't know. I've never used the Rumble Pack. I've heard bad things about it, though.
Well, the old GBA, even Game Boy Color, Pokemon Pinball had a really good Rumble Pack.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, a Drill Dozer and WarioWare Twisted have nice, pretty good rumbles, but the DS Rumble Pack is absolutely awful. Just a complete waste. It makes more noise than it does vibration. It's really terrible.
And that's something I hope the Wii controller doesn't do. I hope that rumble is solid and not noisy.
Oh, you know it will be.
I suppose. How do we know? If you're going to be making noises out of the speaker and rumble at the same time, there's no guarantee that those noises aren't going to get drowned out.
True, I don't know, man.
Nintendo's done a pretty good job with rumble so far.
They pretty much brought rumble into the controller, so I'm pretty confident they'll be able to
Plus, especially if you're going to be sword fighting, you want a really good rumble.
Yeah.
You know, if you're going to be clashing.
Yeah. I certainly hope that Mike is right, that the Legend of Zelda sword fighting is as fun as he says it is. But, you know, that's something that's obviously first party, and we can trust Nintendo to do something really good with their hardware and with the games that they're going to be doing. Legend of Zelda, I think, is going to be obviously an excellent product. But a question that a lot of people are asking is whether Wii is going to have the excellent third-party support that we really have been waiting for since the Super NES. The N64 was obviously a failure there. The GameCube was a step up, but not as successful as they wanted it to be. Right now, we've got big companies like Ubisoft putting out a lot of support behind Wii. We've got some things promised from EA. We got to play Madden at E3. And Capcom has some things promised as well that we haven't really seen much of. So the question is, how important is third-party support to a Nintendo console if Nintendo's made it this far? And what's going to happen if we don't get it?
If you guys remember that the Namco president once said, your biggest competitor on a Nintendo console is Nintendo games. And obviously that's very true, in that the Nintendo audience pretty much almost exclusively will only heavily support a Nintendo game. Even great games like Resident Evil 4, while selling well, they're not huge blockbusters. But I take issue with that, and the fact that, but the thing is that the majority of the games that come out on Nintendo systems that are of quality are Nintendo games. So I think that if more third-party publishers put out great games on Nintendo systems, they would overcome that hurdle.
It's sort of a vicious cycle. But the other thing is, the problem of hardcore Nintendo fans only buying Nintendo games in theory should not be as big of a deal with Wii, because Wii is not really catering to hardcore Nintendo fans.
Right, they've got to go for the more casual thing.
Yeah, but I think you're still going to see Metroid, Zelda. Like, you're not going to... All of the GameCube's big hardcore hits from Nintendo are going to be on Wii. So I don't necessarily know if that argument holds up.
And isn't the Virtual Console a basically hardcore conceit?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but if you want to grow your audience, you have to have excellent third-party support for this thing. I mean, you've got to have all kinds of input and ideas. It can't just be Nintendo games coming out for it, because Nintendo fans tend to be a very niche audience. It's a large niche, but the idea of the Wii is to grow the market base.
In Japan, where the DS Lite is just a monster beyond comprehension, you know, most of the big hits on the DS there are from Nintendo, and it's completely changed the market. So
my favorite DS games here are third party. Outside of maybe Star Fox, it's Trauma Center, Phoenix Wright. Yeah, it's the big third party stuff that really do me.
Some big third party hits in the DS for Japan, though. I mean, Final Fantasy III is huge. The Tamagotchi Corner Shop game sold over 1 million units. Was it Jump Superstars did pretty well. So
I thought that wasn't that first party.
It might have been published by Nintendo, but it wasn't made by Nintendo for sure. And it didn't feature Nintendo characters, you know.
Yeah.
How did Castlevania do in Japan?
Pretty well, but I think in modern times, Castlevania games typically sell better in America.
Really? Well,
the thing is that the thing about Konami is that they kind of gimp their chances whenever they release a Castlevania here. They'll release it, but they'll only release like 8 copies.
Yeah, well, and we've also been hearing the promise of, from Capcom, a Resident Evil game. And there's so much speculation going on about that. And to me, that was one of the best things about GameCube third-party support, was we had Capcom, and we had an excellent game come out of it, Resident Evil 4. We had all of the Resident Evil games available on GameCube, whether you like that or not. I personally would love to find a copy of Code Veronica, and I can't find one anywhere.
You know,
I like the remake. I love that.
Capcom support on GameCube, I mean, they...
Well,
right
what
the
about
gate,
Beautiful
they
Joe and
strong.
Killer 7? Those are two of your favorite games.
They are two of my favorite games, but you know what? They're also on PS2.
But didn't it take a while for at least each of them? I thought it
Killer
took at least a couple
came
months.
Killer 7 came out on PS2 and GameCube at the same time, and Beautiful Joe came out about 6 months later.
Ouch.
So,
well, Capcom historically doesn't start supporting a console until it's been out for a while.
But that wasn't the case with the GameCube. I mean, they were pretty much like, we're going to give you 5 exclusive games.
Okay, but what was the first Capcom game to come out on GameCube?
I believe it was... Correct me if I'm wrong. It was either Pin Number 3 or... Was it Resident Evil Zero? I'm not sure.
It was well over a year after the system came out. And that's why I'm not really shocked to find that Capcom does not have any Wii launch games. They're probably not going to have anything for Wii until at least next Christmas. Because that's just how they do.
Remake came in the May after the GameCube was released.
I wouldn't really count
any
of those, either Remake
I would count
or,
Remake. Remake
I
was
count
a...
Remake, dude. That
yeah.
Was...
Well, and here's something else to consider as well, is that launches for a system are the time when gamers will buy anything. They will just buy, like, I'm going to be having 5 or 6 games, and I know that in 2 years I'm going to look back and be like, why did I get that? I have friends who had GameCube, and they bought all the Batman games. I was like, I told them at the time, I said, don't buy those Batman games. They're not good. And like, well, it's, you know, it's something to play.
I would agree with the fact that a lot in launch games, you have the opportunity to have a big hit, maybe a little bit more than usual. But for the Wii launch specifically, if I was a third-party publisher, I would not put a big game out just yet. What I would wait for is the initial drought after, like, maybe in a few months after the Wii launches, and then release my big game. Because that's when people are going to be hungering for it more.
That's what Nintendo is doing with Metroid and Mario.
Absolutely, because, I mean, like, at launch, really, after Zelda, after, I guess not Excitruck, but... but, you know, after, like, maybe Red Steel, like, high-profile Wii games that are going to sell a lot. I mean, it's really not a great time to be releasing, you know, your all-star game for the Wii. I would wait until maybe March or April.
If you look at the 360, both Oblivion and Graw came out a few months after the system launch, and both of them were huge successes. So absolutely. I think it's a very good strategy to wait until the slow period, which we've been assured with Wii will not exist, but...
Yeah,
yeah. Right.
You know what's interesting about this launch is that never in the history of Nintendo that I'm familiar with was there a major brand new third-party IP for the launch of any Nintendo system. Red Steel is the only one I can think of, unless there's one for GameCube.
Super Monkey Ball kind of was. It was an arcade port, but they added so much to it from the arcade version that it was almost a new thing.
And it helped. It made it a big hit.
Yeah. I mean, Rogue Leader was a sequel, but it was a drastically different game.
And that was the launch title to get, in my opinion. There was nothing better than Rogue Leader. And so I can't say I'm looking forward to anything from LucasArts, really, because we haven't heard much about what they're going to do. Factor 5 has pledged support for other systems, and they seem to really want graphical
power.
Dude,
we're going to get a Jedi game. It's going to happen.
Oh, yeah.
It's gonna happen.
Because, how can they... All right.
Star Wars
how
get
can lose,
the
it's
game.
Exactly. Like, it's so perfect... that it would have to sell at least pretty well.
I'll tell you this. The fact that in the Star Wars genre of video games, the most successful representation of what we have seen in the movies outside of the three or four levels in Rogue Leader that were from the movies is the Lego Star Wars games. And I don't say that as an insult. I say that as Lego Star Wars does it so perfectly.
Didn't Knights of the Republic sell really well?
Yeah.
I'm talking about the stuff from the movies.
Oh,
not
so you mean
Republic.
Non-expanded universe. Okay.
Non-expansion. I'm talking about the very stuff that gets the core. I mean, I'm not attracted. I'm attracted to KOTOR as a game, not as a Star Wars fan. That's me.
Well, the episode 3 games were extremely successful.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that. There's a friend of mine who works at another website wrote, like, I think one of the only, like, gushing reviews of the game. I think he gave it, like, an 8.5. And he writes for a relatively small website, but he was, like, front page... Episode 3 website. Like, blah 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 from blah 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 gave, you know, Star Wars Episode 3 an 8.5.
Some guy. You know, that's the way we've got to get more hits, is to start really liking the bad games. That's the
key. You gotta start chilling out, man. You gotta start chilling out.
Alright, this is a good time to take a break, actually. We'll be back with you after this message.
Yar, this be Sweet Pete, the Pirate of the Jungle. And ye be listening to Pirate Radio Nintendo.
Oh, yeah, Pete, this really is a radio-free Nintendo. Arr, sorry.
Me timbers be shivered.
And we're back. I want to move topics just a little bit. I want to talk about something that has been... it's more of a forum thing. I'm a forum reader. I love our Planet GameCube forums and all the writers out there, the posters. And I've kind of had a little bit of experience with them lately because of it, and Carl has as well, and so now has Ryan, in that we've all posted recently controversial articles and that have gotten a lot of discussion in the forums, and I don't know about elsewhere, and hate mail as well. So it's really something I want to first talk to Johnny about this, in that we discussed a little bit at our last meeting about controversial articles and about controversy and what it does. Why is it that some things are controversial to a Nintendo fan and some things are just not allowed to be talked about? For instance, The Legend of Zelda potentially not being any good, being problems with the Wii Remote, or a Final Fantasy III game, Final Fantasy game at all, being bad. What do you think, Johnny?
As a matter of policy at Planet GameCube, we never write an article for the purpose of it being controversial or hoping that it's going to really piss off somebody and, you know, get us linked on Penny Arcade or Gaff or whatever. That's not the point. We write what we think. And, you know, I expect that all opinions expressed on Planet GameCube to be honest, and I think that they are. The reason that people get so upset about them, and especially at a Nintendo enthusiast site, which we are, and we all know that Nintendo fans are very passionate, and a lot of them have such an emotional attachment to the company that they feel like our job is to basically promote Nintendo, and that's what we should do. And I disagree very strongly with that. I think our job is to cover Nintendo and to critique Nintendo and to say, when Nintendo does something good, to say, good job, here's why. And when they do something stupid, we should say, no, wag your finger, you should fix this. Because ultimately, I think everybody on the staff is a big fan of Nintendo, and we want them to be successful and do the best that they can. But that doesn't mean that we should be cheerleaders for them. It means that we should be constructive.
I got an interesting email after I wrote the article about about whether or not games on Wii, if they are going to be fundamentally better because of the controller. And I got some funny hate mail, which I guess I'll go into later, but I got one, the guy who asked me, you know, if you're so against this, why do you even write for Planet GameCube? Like, and I'm wondering, like, dude, this is why I write for Planet GameCube. Because yeah. I feel so, like our fans, I have a huge bond with Nintendo, and because of that, I don't want them to mess up. I want them to know about these problems that the community has so that they maybe have time to fix it.
And I'll tell you what, for me, when I was writing that editorial about, which was an open letter to Nintendo, very pretentiously titled, but framed the way I wanted it to be so that it was something that would hopefully grab some attention, I wrote it because I was hoping that I was speaking for people. And I think I just hit a nerve, because when I went into the forums, I found out that I spoke for 2 people out of 80. And that corrected my assumptions right away, but at the end of the day, I felt like, well, I was speaking for me, and so at least there's that.
You spoke for you, Ian Sane, and like half of Mario.
No, you were look, I mean, I love the guys on the forums, but they're a very small sampling of our readership, and then our readership is a very small sampling of Nintendo fans, who are a very small sampling of gamers.
Gamers at large, yeah.
And so, I mean, I always retalk back on my articles and pretty much everyone else's as well. And I'm interested in what people say, and I want people to talk about it because a lot of the discussions turn out to be really interesting. But you can't take that as a survey of what people think about what you write, because I can tell you that our traffic numbers compared to the number of people who actively post in the forums are wildly disproportionate. Those people are less than 1%. Of the people who read our website. And most people read the website, form their own opinions about it, and never tell us anything about it. They don't tell us what they think.
Oddly enough, most of the mail that I get from readers isn't from people from the forum.
Yeah, that's true, so, because they know that they can just post something in the forums to talk with us. And that's one, I'll tell you what, one of the best things about the forums is that it's, and I feel like as a site we do a better job than others, is having a direct interaction with the readers. And the readers, very often on the forums, are able to give us the news, because they are doing just as much investigation as we are.
That's the little hat tips that we have in some articles where, thanks to blah 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 from our forums for tipping us off here.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's about all we have to say about controversial games, controversial articles, other than to mention that Stan had a controversial one as well, which was Mario Power Tennis.
We've discussed that earlier.
I know we discussed it before on a previous podcast, or at least you did. But
yeah.
We kind of had a back and forth in between podcasts, but here it is. Let's lay it out right now. Mario Power Tennis on the Game Boy Advance, a tennis game for a portable, got a perfect 10?
Yeah.
What's perfect? What is a perfect 10?
Okay. I'm sorry. I said something I shouldn't have.
I don't like that word at all. You got the highest score that you can give it.
Okay. Yes. So Johnny doesn't think perfect 10. Stan, do you think that you considered it perfect, or did you consider it just... What did you consider it? Well, I want to know your thing.
Nothing's perfect, but it was the best possible experience you could get from a game. It did not just give you what you expected, it gave you more. And it was enjoyable on many different levels. It wasn't just a good tennis game. And it wasn't just a good tennis game that you could play with someone else by linking your GBA. But it was a good tennis game that provided other diversions. It provided this unique little story that was kind of cute. Now, granted, I didn't play the GBC version, so I only played the GBA version, and it was a unique experience to me. And I thought the side games were brilliant. I loved just going in there just to play the little mini games, because all of them were so much fun. And they progressed, and everything you did affected your character's stats. And as an RPG fan also, that really affected me, because it hit every single point that I like. I'm an RPG fan, and I'm a sports fan, and it's a sports RPG. And it did it very well.
Okay. I trust you, Stan.
You know what I think it is? It's that there's such a huge barrier between 9.5 and 10 in a reader's mind. Like, to give you an example, I gave Fire Emblem Path of Radiance a 9.5 because it's an excellent game. But I couldn't justify giving it a 10, just because I have, like, this pedestal that I put 10 at, and, like, I can't bring myself to put a game that I'm not, like, that I wouldn't, like, guard as my baby in like a 10 spot. Like that, you know what I mean? Like I just I for me, and I'm guessing it's the same for a lot of people, especially the people at Something Awful, that it's just like to give a game a 10, it just has to be, it has to break boundaries and bring something new to gaming as a whole. Now obviously Stan doesn't feel the same way, because I mean,
no, I think people are too afraid of
tens. Yeah.
For me, there's...
Oh my god, this has to be a groundbreaking game that shakes the world.
Yes.
Like,
it does.
No, it just has to be a great damn game that I want to play over and over again.
For me,
and
there's...
It's going to be something I'm going to return to and keep playing.
For me, there's not a very big difference between a 9.5 and a 10. It's no more of a difference than there is between a 4.5 and a 5 out of 10. But the good thing about our system, the thing I like about our system is that we don't prescribe. You guys know this. You've seen our review guidelines that I give out, and they're very vague, actually. I mean, we kind of discuss what is a 0 or a 1, and then what is a 10, and then between that, nothing. It's up to you. And what I tell people is that I don't want you to try to be consistent with other writers on the staff or writers at other websites or magazines or whatever. I just want you to be consistent with yourself, and not even so much from one review that you've done to the next. Although that would be good, because your people who are familiar with you as a writer can follow the logic better that way. The most important thing for me is that what you write in words matches the scores on some intuitive level. That if you bash a game, you back it up. If you praise a game, you back it up. Because what I see at a lot of other websites is that there's this big disconnect between the text of the review, which presumably not many people even bother to read,
nope.
And the scores that are applied to it. And it just, like, you know, not that I'm following some kind of rubric, but just plain, simple, common sense. You know, if I read the review and I look at the scores and they don't seem to match up, that's just something you can't quantify. That's a problem. And I just try to make sure that we avoid that. And beyond that, I'm not concerned with consistency in scores.
Well, I think that one of the things that we've talked about so far is a 10, but personally, I find that a low score is something that people are afraid to give out too. It seems to me that for a mediocre game, people are still willing to say, okay, 5, 6, 5.5, when if I play a mediocre game and I find it to be offensive, not because it is so completely lacking, like, just because it's not because it's unplayable, it's not because it's broken, it's because that what it does is pathetic, and that even a child would find it to be boring. To me, that is not, just because it's playable doesn't mean it's a 4 or a 5. To me, that's a 2 or a 3.
Watch
that's
out
saying,
for One Piece.
See, I prescribe the different way. I figure 5 is completely average and hardly worth playing. And then anything below a 5, you're getting into a Mystery Science Theater zone, just trash. Stuff that's unplayable, worthless, crap. And you'll see, I'm not afraid of giving away those low scores.
But see, I think that that's too high, because I think that those mediocre average games should not be given so much cred. I don't think that a 5 is appropriate. I gave Monster House a 4.5, and sometimes I think about it, and I would rather have given it something like a 3.5. But in the end, I agreed with our staff in saying that, no, a 4.5 is better based on what I've written, and the way Johnny says, consistent between your words and your score. But to me, that game is not just average. It is mediocre to the point of offending. So... I think 5's too high.
See, I understand what you're saying, because when you have mediocre games, it just you play it and you go, why do you even bother? But when you play real trash like Greg Hastings,
I knew you were going to mention paintball again.
Yeah, it's our go-to bad game for like all podcasts anywhere.
When you play something like that, mediocre is wonderful.
You know what though? Here's my thing. When I play a really bad game, and like it's just monstrously bad, I have to also say, you know what though? I'm pissed about playing this game, but I gotta be in the mindset that I would be even more pissed if I actually paid for it.
Oh, God, yeah.
Like with Ultimate Spider-Man, I gave it a 7.0 out of 10, and it was a great game on its own merits, but it was like 3 hours long, and $50. So, I had to just tear it down because it was so short. And I was thinking, you know what? If I had paid $50, I might have given it like a 2, because it would have been that. I would have been that angry about it.
Something ended that
fast. I mean, dude, $50, 3 hours—that's crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially if there's no real replay value to go back.
There isn't. There's no replay.
That's a pretty expensive form of entertainment.
Yeah.
And that's why we do reviews on PGC or anywhere, is because video games cost a lot of money.
And you can't really return it and get your money back anymore. You get maybe 15% of what the game's original price was in store credit now. I mean, it's not really... You can't really get... there's no... It's not like the old days where you could just take a game back, I don't like it, give me my money back. You know, so it's a really expensive hobby.
Yeah, it is. Absolutely. Well, I've got... I want to move on to... I think that's the end of our podcast for as far as topics. I want to mention one thing, special thing here at both Radio Free Nintendo and with Planet GameCube, which is that we have a contest coming up that is sure to excite because it involves Radio Free Nintendo specifically. So we're announcing it here and on the website. You will be able to go and read an article by the time this is posted. It's a contest that is hosted for, we're hosting it, but it's sponsored by D3 Publisher of America, who's been kind enough to give us copies of the next Naruto game, as well as some other special things, some other special Naruto merchandise. And we're going to be having three prize packs to give out to the three best audio spots that you can record and put here on Radio Free Nintendo. And they have to just be from 15 to 30 seconds long. 30 is the max, 15 is the minimum. And they are going to be due in roughly 2 weeks. There's going to be a date available on the website. We want them to be funny. We want them to be dramatic. We want them to be have a lot of music. Nothing copyrighted, please. But also, it could just be something completely bare. Use your imagination, mention Naruto at least once, and send it over to us, and the three best ones that we get are going to get some Naruto products. So be sure to send those in and get your voice heard on Radio Free Nintendo.
Is it okay to use Naruto sound effects from Naruto?
It's a very good question. I'm going to go ahead and...
Extra points. All right, for any reader or anyone who sends it in, if you don't say believe it, seriously, if I hear that even once, I'm throwing it out. Sorry.
Yeah, believe it, readers.
Believe it.
Believe it, all right?
Out of bounds.
Out of bounds. If I ever hear believe it again, it'll be, I'll explode.
Let's clarify that the prize pack includes a copy of the GameCube game, not the GBA game. I don't think we have any copies of there are two. There are two games coming out, one for GameCube, one for GBA. The one we're giving away is GameCube, and we have three copies of that. And you'll also get some other Naruto swag with that. I don't know exactly what yet.
Yeah, it's some cool stuff though. So if you like Naruto or if you like Radio Free Nintendo, definitely enter the contest, and you'll get some free stuff and be heard here on Radio Free Nintendo. So that's our show. I want to thank our guest, Johnny Boy, again. And, Hi. Of course, the pirates have invaded this podcast.
Yarr.
I want to thank them as well. I also want to mention that you can send in feedback to us at our email address, podcast@planetgamecube.com. We love to hear from you. We will very often read your mail over here on the podcast and respond to it. Determines what our topics are very often. And also, you can leave feedback for us on iTunes as well. Do you like us? Do you hate us? Tell us on iTunes. You can go into iTunes, leave a read a review, and rate us.
I just want to add that the music that you're hearing on today's episode is from Jason Ricci and New Blood. And if you want to learn more about them, you can go to jasonricci.com. That's JASONRICCI.com.
This has been Radio Free Nintendo, episode 19. Have a good night.